Bonnie Johnny, everyone. This is Professor Amon Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, where I taught for 34 years. I'm the former city councilman for the city of Compton, the former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome you to the Conscience Corner, where we're going to have a very, very serious presentation by Brother Arsene Jabal, who just got in from Cuba and giving us an update on what's going on and his perspectives of various topics that we need to discuss. Then I'm going to close out with an understanding of why we celebrate Kwanzaa. So anyway, Jabal, go ahead. Oh, this is Arsene Jabal. Arsene Jabal, formerly Jerry Palmer, is a really serious historian where he does a lot of studying. At one time at Cal State, he majored in history, but then he changed over to art. And he's one of the most dynamic speakers that we had on the show before, and presenters that we've had on the show before. He's been living in Cuba for over 20 years, and he's just got a wealth of knowledge and wisdom when it comes to death and immortality and the whole concept of our language, where language came from, and just an entree of topics. He was one of the favorite speakers at Cal State Long Beach during the Black Consciousness Conference, where he put on amazing workshops. And at the same time, he's he published three books, Black Truth,
Black New Black Revelations,
and A Conspiracy of Silence. All three books are bestsellers, and people love to read them and read through them. So he's going to go ahead and discuss some topics that he thinks we should be conscious of. So Arsene Jabal, go ahead,
Arsene. All right, Habari Gani, everybody. Since the season is right for discussing a little bit about the origins of these holidays that we have now, especially with New Year's coming up here, and then having just completed the Christmas, so-called Christmas celebration. So most of us accept these things as gospel. I guess that's one way of putting it. But but few of us really know the origins or how these things originated among the Gnostics of ancient Africa, and especially in Egypt and in what is today we call Palestine and on that whole region. The Gnostic religion, if you want to call it religion, was actually a worship of nature, and with the sun as being the primary factor in nature, as I'm sure you
go ahead. He's probably.
Yes. The Gnostics believed in was based on nature. So there's a big difference between that and the so-called other Western religions that we have come to call Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, which almost nothing can be proven scientifically, and therefore is not natural. So one of the things is New Year's Day, which for me is bogus, you know, because January 1st is not New Year's Day as celebrated by our ancestors. The Gnostics believe that the year has to be based the sun in relationship to the earth. And it makes sense because it is the coming and going of the sun that denotes life. So that is how it was measured. And the ancient New Year's Day was celebrated in what is now in the month of March. which is at the spring equinox. Equinox being when the sun crosses the equator or appears to cross the equator, beginning on the 22nd of March. And then 3 days later, it completes the crossing. That day was the 25th of March, New Year's Day, called New Year's Day, because the sun had made that one revolution. So there's some scientific
Yeah, I don't like.
which we can, or questions that we claim to believe in so much, you know, the celebration of Christmas and New Year's is the origins of it is just totally unknown to most Christian followers, so-called followers, people who swear by these celebrations without having any clue as to where it came from, or certainly know nothing about the Gnostic religion, which is widespread around the world at the ancient time of the falsification and presentation of Christianity. That occurred around in the year three, I think 313 was the first year that the Emperor Constantine in Rome declared that Christianity would be the official religion in Rome and outlawed all other religions. And then they underscored that, or when they had their first council in the Council of Nicaea or Nice in 325 AD. And they had taken, plagiarized almost all of the gospels had been written, pre-written in Egypt years before, in centuries before, so that everything was based on the astronomy, something that was not only provable but was visible. And so this was the true origins of both these celebrations of Christmas and of New Year's.
You have to tell them they keep going in and out.
These celebrations are these claims of a birth on
Duval.
January is New Year's Day. We should understand what the origins of these celebrations are and how they've been plagiarized and then altered, changed to fit the narrative of the Romans in the first place, and people who wanted supremacy over not only Rome, the empire, but over the whole world. And you know, I grew up, as did most black people in this country, in the Christian church. You know, I used to go to Sunday school and go to communion and choir rehearsal, and I went to Bible school and all of this. I had a pastor on my grandfather, my maternal grandfather was a pastor of a church there in Philadelphia. And on my father's side, my grandfather was deacon in Beulah Baptist Church, which I remember well. So, but no one ever gave us any scientific meaning to the whole gospel, Old Testament or New Testament, because none existed. But we didn't know that, because, and if we asked questions about it, because it did not seem possible, then we were told you just got to have the faith. You got to keep the faith. You got to believe, boy. That's what they used to tell me. So one of the things I want to mention is the New Year's celebration. This New Year's, as January the 1st, never existed in no parts of Africa, as far as I have determined so far. That it came about beginning about 200 years before the Christian era began, It's about 2,200 years ago. One of the Roman emperors, I think his name was Numa. I forget the second part of his name, but he was using the date of January the 1st as the date of naming the Roman consuls. The consuls were like, they would take the place in some ways of in America, the system here of the judiciary or the legislative branch or the Congress, in that they were both able to either agree with the presidential, or in this case it was Rome, so with the emperor's decrees, or they could veto it. So it was a consensus way of ruling. So these consuls were named at that date, January the 1st. And the month of January was named after a Roman god called Janus. And Janus was the god of the opener. He was he opened the doors and opened the earth and opened the year. So that's why that date originally began. Then, when Julius Caesar came along, about a little more than 100 years after Numa, he decided to upgrade the calendar. The reason is because they had been measuring the year by 365 days and had not considered that the year is 365 days and 6 hours long. So those 6 hours after 4 years become a full day. So he wanted to adjust the calendar to mark and to bring it back into to bring it back online, if you don't mind my putting it that way, but to bring it up to date. And having and when he did so, he decided to retain January the 1st as the date for opening the civil new year in the Roman Empire. Since it already was that, he didn't want to change it, so he retained it. So then January became the first month, but even the names of the months are buried back in, we have to go back. The months, first of all, were never named after the Roman system, January, February, March, April, etc., etc. And if you're going to use those terms, then you have to explain why and how this alteration was put into place. First of all, the first 5 months of the year were named in the Gnostic belief, were named after the five visible planets in the solar system. That is Mercury, Venus,
Oh, never mind.
Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. These are planets which you can see with the naked eye. You don't need a telescope or anything. And so the first 5 months were named after them. And they were named in the order of their proximity to the sun, how far they were from the sun. The closest one to the sun is the planet Mercury, which is, I forget the exact mileage, but it rotates around the sun over, it takes the Earth 365 and a quarter days to make one revolution. Well, Mercury does it in 88 days. And because it's so close to the sun, it's invisible most of the time. It's only visible 3 times a year for about 2 weeks at a time. And the reason is the rest of the time it's either behind the sun or in front of the sun. Either way, you can't see it because of the brightness of the sun if it's in front of it, and of course because of the sun blocks it out where it on the backside. So I had the I guess let's call it pleasure, exciting pleasure. I used to have a place there in Bamako in Mali, And in the evening, at every day, everybody goes up on their roofs and sits back and watches the sunset. It's cool. And I used to go up on my roof, and one day the sun set, and boom, I could see Mercury. The only time you could see it is just after sunset or just before sunrise. And like I say, this happens 3 times a year, an Earth year. So when the sun sets, Mercury is so close to the sun, and if it's in the right position, you could see the star, just what appears to be a star. This light just appears right above the sun after it sets. And it's just, for me, it was exciting because I had never, I'd seen most of the planets, the 5 planets, but not not Mercury. And even before that, I had a telescope. I think that was, I don't know where it was now. But anyway, we used to see the planets with the, but we never could see Mercury because it was out of position. So the only time you can see it is once the sun goes down and you could see the horizon, and there just above the horizon is was this tiny planet, So that was exciting. Now, the reason that first month was a name, was March 25th, because the sun, as the Earth circles it with its tilt, it makes the sun appear to go up and down like a sine wave. Or if you invert the sun with the equator at the top, which is the Gnostic way of doing so, then the sun makes this symbol of the S over the period of 1 year. And what happens is it starts out in the middle at the equator and then goes in to the south, let's say, goes all the way down to what is called the solstice. It takes 3 months, and it reaches there in June, and June 22nd. And then it starts moving back toward the north. And it on September 21st, 22nd, it reaches the equator again, and for 3 days it crosses the equator, and this is called the autumn equinox. And it's called equinox because when the sun is directly above the equator, the Earth and Sun equator are in aligned, then there'll be 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness on the Earth. And that's why it's when the equinox simply means equal night. The night is equal to the daylight. So you had this equinox, which occurs in September, and then as the sun continues moving in that sine way to the north, it goes up to okay. I think I might have mixed my months up a second. And anyway, it crosses the equator, moving north on the in March 22nd to the 25th, and as it's coming to the north, since most of the civilization on Earth at that in the ancient times was to the north of the equator, then it was viewed as coming to the north and therefore arriving to starting a new year. So the day after the sun clears the equator was the 25th of March. It arrives there the 22nd, and it takes 3 days for it to make the total crossing. And that as soon as it does, then this was called the New Year's Day. Another year begins. It then moves all the way up to the 22nd of June, to the summer solstice. I think I mismentioned it as being the winter solstice. The winter solstice occurs in December, but anyway, it comes up to summer solstice occurring around the 22nd of June, and then it starts to appear to move south again, and it crosses the equator on the 22nd of September and continues on the south, and it reaches the solstice, which is the 22nd of December. That, if you live in the north of the equator, that would be the first day of winter, the coldest part, you know. So these dates were Gnostics' huge celebrations, and it was not just in Africa. This was all around the world, you know. So that was the New Year's Day in the Northridge. And in fact, it was in most of the countries that observed Christianity, adopted Christianity, they still celebrated the 25th of March as New Year's Day. And especially in the Protestant countries, because they were trying to pull away from the Catholic, so-called Catholic beliefs of Christianity and convert them more to a more of a pure form. So that meant accepting the Gnostic date of 25 March as New Year's Day. And it's the one which you know, I don't do anything physically, but it's the one when it occurs that I feel that is New Year's Day, because you can go outside and see it, you know. I'm always fond of sitting out on my patio and pointing out to Christian, my son, down in Havana, where when the sun is at equinox in the springtime, and explaining to him how it appears to make this that as it, in over the course of 1 year, the earth rotating around it. So that was the original New Year's Day. And there's one other point to make there. In Africa, they viewed the universe, the sky, so to speak, especially at night. The night sky was viewed as the Milky Way, which y'all in Los Angeles probably never seen.
No.
It's too many lights there. You can't see people live. Unfortunately, we can't see the Milky Way. But when I was a kid, I lived in New Jersey for a while. So seeing it at night was so exciting. It's so many, many stars. But anyway, the darkness above was called a Nu, NU. And this is where the symbol of the letter N comes from, because it looks like the surface of water. So it just like this. And from that, they stylized it into the letter N. And in Egypt, the symbol for water is just that. And it's pronounced N. Anyway, that darkness above the Milky Way was called the upper Nu, and that below it was called the lower Nu. So in the course of 1 year, the earth. The sun, excuse me, apparently appears to move from one new to the other one, so that in over the course of a year, the ancient Egyptian called the cycle Nunu or Nun, Nun or Nunu, and this evolved into other languages that still use that today to explain the length of a year. For example, we say Anu in Egypt. It was Anu, Annu, which became annual in the Anno in Rome, ancient Rome, and then in English today it was annual. So that denotes the sun having moved through the upper Nu and the lower Nu over the course of a year. So the Japanese say nen, N-E-N, to designate the length of a year. In Korea, it's N-Y-E-O-N. Both ends are used in these terms to denote the length of a year. The same way in Mandarin, It's N, let me think, NIAN, Nyan, which means a year. So the reason is because all of those languages and all of those cultures evolved out of Africa, and the etymology, when we properly use it, proves that these terms evolved from an earlier place, and Africa was really the center of all culture in the world, and you could trace the most it, and the first time I came to realize that is when I was in Japan there, and in studying the hieroglyphs, even though most of the hieroglyphic scholars were from Europe and were Christian, that most of the some of the phonetics that they applied were accurate, even though they're definition for what the phonetics meant was different. They always bias that to favor their Christian beliefs. But the phonetically, I could see that, man, many words in English and in Japanese had evolved out of the Egyptian hieroglyphs. And not only that, some of them were the exact same word. And a case in point would be the nen of Japanese meaning a year, and the annual of English meaning a year. And then in between, you find the Roman anno, ANNO, also meaning a year. And then I traveled back then. I went to China, Japan, Korea, the Philippines, India, all of those places. And in those languages, which I was not familiar with them as much as Japanese, but studying in recent years, I see that the term for years still the double N. So the true New Year's astronomically would have to be celebrated on the 25th of March, if we're to be true to the science, Earth-Sun relationship, the scientific aspect of it. But that's overlooked, as I said, for the politics of ancient Rome. And that's how we come up with this January the 1st as New Year's Day. But it has no validity other than that. At one point, they used Christmas as the Gnostics celebrated Christmas as the birth date of the sun. And let me explain that. The reason they did so was, as I said, the sun reaches the winter solstice on the 22nd of December, takes 3 days to make that reversal of its direction. And that on the third day was the 25th of December. And so they celebrated that as the beginning of the sun. But the sun that they were celebrating was not the physical sun, it was the metaphor for the sun, which was put in human form. And in this case, since it was new, it was a babe or a child, and they called that child Yesu. Yesu evolved on into the ancient Roman language as Jesus. And of course, that went on into English as Jesus. That's where that term comes from, has no other origin, and makes perfect sense. Yea in ancient Egyptian means to come or go, actually. And Su meant this. S, the seed or the child. So this was the babe that was coming. And the reason it was called Yesu at 25th of December is because the child was not yet here on the earth. That occurs on the first day of spring at the equinox when it crosses the equator. So it was coming. So Yesu meant the child that was still to come. And the birth of that child was in the spiritual world, the spiritual realm. So we view our, or we used to in under Gnosticism, believe, equate our life cycle to that of the sun's life, sun cycle over the period of 1 year. So the sun is had a birth date, which was in March, as we say, New Year's Day. Then it went through the high season, the summer in the north in June, and then it died on the 25th of September, which was the equinox, whereby it was going to the south and going into the autumn here in the north and eventually into winter. So it was seen as going away at that point. So the term ye was means both to come and to go. In Japan, we say doko e kimasu ka, means where are you going? Yeah, or doko e kimasu ka, where are you coming from? So to and fro, you know, going and coming. So either way, and the sun in its movement is always going or coming. It's, you know, whether it's rising in the morning, but it depends on your position, your perspective on the earth, your position on the earth, as to whether it's, we say sun down, which is going down, and sun up when it's coming. Is moving in the same cycle, the same our perspective, it has the appearance of both coming and going simultaneously. And that's what the term ye came to mean in other languages. So that struck me. Doko e kimasu ka, where are you going to? Or doko e kimasu ka means where are you coming from? You know? So they meant either way, to go and to come. So that's what the term ye meant, and su, as I say, means the child. So it was viewed as the birth of the child was in March. And this was the physical sun in the sky. And then that physical sun, when it reaches the equator in September at the autumn equinox, and that's when things start to die as far as the leaves on the trees and the plants, and the harvest season is mostly over now. And from that point, it goes down into December to the first day of winter. And then we know after that, the hawk starts to make its appearance, and things get tough, and they stay that way until the first day of spring, which is when the sun recrosses, comes back to the north, and hence that was New Year's Day, a new beginning. So that was the cycle, and we equated it in metaphor to a human life. So the sun born at Christmas, Christmas means the birth of the Christ. Now, the Christ was also an ancient Gnostic term for a dead body, but one that had been embalmed and prepared for burial. So it was Kras, K-R-A-S, or Kras. And when you added the T, it denoted that it had been Krassed or prepared, anointed, with embalmed and prepared for burial. So this death of the sun occurs in metaphor in September the 25th, and 3 days after the autumn equinox. And then once it reaches the furthest point south and takes 3 days from the 22nd of December, 23rd, 24th, then on the third day, it reverses direction, starts move to the north, and thus it was considered a birth. But since it had died in September, it was still in the spiritual world. It wasn't reborn on earth yet. So it was the child that was to come. Hence the name Yesu applied to it, the coming child. So then mas is a, the term MS in Egyptian is the picture of a woman who's giving birth to a child, and you could see the head and the arms of the baby protruding from the vagina as the mother gives birth. This mother was the M, and the S was represented by the child. So MS was the pronunciation for that symbol, mus or mes, MES. So this then signifies
you froze, sir. Are you coming back in?
He can't hear you.
And then wrapped it in seamless swaths of linen, cotton, which were had no seam, so the one piece, the width of it was the entire length of the body, and they wrapped it in that. And they've, up to date, these grave robbers, mostly from Europe, no, from Europe, all from Europe, but mostly from England, have found one mummy, which in which there was 1,000 folds, which means that much linen around it, you know, already for burial, for interment. So, Chris, yes.
Jabal,
yes.
You've been going in and out and freezing, but go back over the mummification, the beginning of it.
Okay. Once again, as I said, we, the Gnostics equated the cycle of the earth's relationship with the sun, or 1 year, as being equivalent to the life of a human being on earth, whereby that human being is born in March the 25th, after the sun crosses the equator coming to the north, and then dies on the autumn equinox, which is in September, as the sun crosses the equator going to the south, which means the north will be in autumn and winter, cold times. So, so what was your question again, Ron? I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted you to go over the mummification process.
Okay, so the human metaphor, the metaphoric figure for the sun was named Asar or Osiris, and and he takes on that name upon the autumn equinox in September, whereby the body is anointed, if you will, or covered with oils and unguents, and sometimes balm or gum from trees or what have you, and then wrapped in linen, folds of linen, and depending on whether he was a rich person, the more wraps were put on, or a important person or something, but a royalty or something like that. But a regular, ordinary person might have two or three folds of linen. Basically, it was to preserve the body, in theory, for life in the afterlife, so they could cross Amenta. Are you saying something, Ra? I could see your lips moving, but I don't hear anything. No? Okay. So the body then of the son of Osiris, who was the name given to the son in its first instance, is preserved after and then buried in a, in what's called the Mesken. The Mesken, Ken means the central location, either as a depth or as a height. So It was buried in the mess can, which is like the crypt or the coffin. Not the coffin, but the coffin was placed in the mess can. And mess means, MS, as I said, means to be reborn or to be born. So the mess can was the center of the birthplace, even though it was a body, being a dead body being put in there because of the belief in the resurrection. So this body lays there until December, when the sun reaches its furthest point south, and then at solstice, 22nd of December, and it takes 3 to stop and then begin moving. It's just the appearance we get from Earth. So that it's moving, it starts moving to the north on the 25th of December. And hence, in the spiritual world, it is still viewed as a dead person who has been caressed or Christ made into an embalmed corpse, anointed with oil, and then wrapped in these linen wrappings, and then is reborn in the spiritual world, still in the mummification wrappings, on the 25th of December. And so this was called Christmas. The MS means the birth, but it was not the birth of the physical sun in the sky, so to speak. It was the spiritual birth of the Osiris that represented the human being in the sun. So the birth was in the spiritual world, and thereby it was called Christmas. It wasn't, and then the child that was coming was Yesu, which became Jesus, but it was called the Christ because it was still in the spiritual world, still in the mummy wrappings. In fact, I had a picture of those early. Well, I misplaced it, but anyway, some of the early depictions of the Catholic Church of the birth of the baby Jesus shows this babe still wrapped as a mummy and in the coffin with a halo, which was a symbol of the sun, wrapped around its head, and a cross. And the cross, of course, denoted the equinox, when the sun is directly over the equator. The cross in spring, sun has moved all the way to the south, so that the cross is more elongated up and down. So the cross takes on the symbol of the Christian cross, because the sun is further to the south than it is in any other direction. So this is the symbols of Gnosticism, which were applied to the rebirth of the sun on the 25th of December. And that day, 25th of December, was celebrated as the birth of the sun all throughout the world. In the Greek Empire, they celebrated it. And in Rome, they celebrated it. They call it Sol Invicte, Sol meaning solar, which is named for the sun. And Invicti means the undefeated, or the one that could never be defeated. And that was Natalis, sometimes was called Invictus, which is the birth of the sun, which took place while it was still in the spiritual realm. And this was why some people confuse that with New Year's Day, the birth. And so we called it the birth of Christ, or Christ being the dead mummy who had been Christified or embalmed and buried. So this goes on into the coming sun, then becomes Yesu or Jesus in the Christian iconography, until the 25th of March. 22nd, the sun reaches the equator, and as I said, takes 3 days to cross. And so the 25th of March, was the day in which New Year's Day actually occurred in the Northern Hemisphere, and it was celebrated as such around the world. So 25th of March. So I want to say, yeah, save all you're celebrating for the 24th, the night before. But this is all metaphorical, so it's just imagery that represents nature. So that was the main thing. The other things is the names of the first 5 months, which I started mentioning, but I didn't finish. The all of these planets, the five planets that you can see with the naked eye, all of these planets were viewed as female. And when the Greeks and Romans got it, of course, they viewed them as male, but they reverted to the ancient Egypt eunostic beliefs, so that they took the male gods that they named these planets for and considered who was their wives or consorts. The consort of the first planet, or the closest one to the sun, was Mercury. His consort was named Hecate, Hakete. And Hecate was usually viewed with three heads. And the reason that it showed the three phases, as I said, is visible sometimes after sunset, rarely, but sometimes after sunset, you can view it right after the sun goes down. You see it just sitting there right above the sun and going down itself soon after that. So it's visible for a couple hours maybe. And then you can also see it in the morning just before sunrise when it's in position. If you happen to be up, you know, and the sun's aurora is there, and then you could see this star, what appears to be a star, which is actually the planet Mercury. And then it's soon enveloped by the sun rising. But those, so the goddess Hecate, which was the consort of Mercury, had these three phases. One was as the earth star, the morning star, which denoted come the sun rising or coming to earth, and the evening star, the sun going down. So she had the earth star, the evening star, the morning star, the evening star, and then in between was the invisible phase when she was in such proximity between the earth and the sun that you couldn't see because the sun is too bright or the sun's size was blocking it. So those three phases of the goddess Hecate, because of as the consort of Mercury. The second month, and so the month of March, which I said their true New Year's Day begins in March. March, if you look it up in most of these Western dictionaries, they say it was named after the planet Mars. But in fact, it was named after the planet Mercury. So you can look at the letters Mercury, M-E-R-C, and come up with M-A-R-C in March. And you see that they match perfectly. And not only that the fact that it was the closest to the sun and thereby the first month would indicate why March the 25th was considered New Year's Day in the first month. Yes.
We questions now. Let's see if anybody have any questions. What about you, Ernest?
Well, not really, just that he kind of hit me when he was talking about looking at the stars, because I was California boy born here and I never really seen a lot of stars up there because we got the smog and all that here. And until I joined the shipyard, and went out on my first sea trial. Man, and we got, and I was inside eating dinner, and we went out because we go out like 100, 150 miles testing. And I got out there, and I happened to go out, and it was dark, you know, like about 6 in the evening after chow. And I walked out there, and it scared me to death. I saw so many stars. I mean, it was like billions of stars.
Yeah.
Man, and I almost panicked, you know, because I had never seen that before. And then,
fantastic.
You know, I kind of got used to that, and I really enjoyed it, you know.
Yes, yeah, beautiful, you know, isn't it?
Here,
it is,
you know, all this, we can't see nothing here.
No.
You know, but that was really, it was kind of frightening, my first experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine the guys born in the country, they get to see this all the time. But, you know, I thought
yeah.
I reach up and eat, grab the stars. They were so
yeah.
close, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
that's beautiful, man. You remind me how I felt when I looked
yeah.
at the Milky Way for the
yeah,
first time coming,
really
excuse me, out of Philadelphia and then moving
yeah.
down to out in the country in Jersey. You
oh,
know,
wow.
there was no lights at night.
Yeah,
oh,
I know
man, it's incredible. It's just a sight. And I wish that everybody who's stuck
oh,
in
man. Yeah,
the
that's,
cities would just get in their car or sometimes just
I,
go out to the country
yeah.
just to see that, because it's really worth seeing. It's
yeah.
incredible, incredible sight. So,
okay, Dr. Sarita, you have any questions? Are you there? She might be in Africa and can't get a connection. Brother Rasha Key?
No questions. I'm just it's always good to hear Brother Jubal talk about these things, because we've been so brainwashed and not looking at logical information. And we just take in the information and just stay programmed instead of looking at some things different than what you hear. And the very important thing about this was what Professor Amaral would say, don't let your oppressor be your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so by us learning this information and even exposing it, it gives us a renewed sense of just logic, you know,
yes.
logical things that occur. And it's not that complex. It's just, you know, it's amazing. I just love listening to it and being able for Jubal to come on and give this information. The more we hear it, the more other people can hear it and view it. So I'm just always enthused.
Yeah, we have and to. My screen froze for a second.
Yeah.
I said sometimes we have to put ourselves in a position of the ancient African, you know. There was no big artificially lit up cities. You know, there was no universities. Professors standing there at the front of the class with a pointer in hand. They learned from nature was everything. They learned whatever we learn and practice today has. From that and people in Africa, because they had to depend. So they knew that the sun produced all life, you know, plant and animal, and that its relationship to the earth was everything. So they mapped it, observed it, marked every single possible change in it. And, you know, these were holy days to them. So the whole thing was, and they couldn't equate it to anything higher than their own lifestyles. And not only was it there and to be seen and observed, but it was, it repeated itself. So, you know, it was cyclic. So you could see it over and over. So the the Nile would begin its overflow, its flooding, and start flowing from and bringing with it sediment from the rich soil in Equatoria, and deposited it on the sands of the of what today is Egypt and Ethiopian Egypt, and making the soil rich and producing rich plants. I went to the island of Elephantine in the southern part of Egypt on the Nile, where they had a meter which measured the height of the water at a certain point after the flooding began. Days or maybe a week, they could
Keep going.
the water would rise, and then they could, because based on that prediction, they can then go and mark out their fields and properties and erect things to keep things in order, to keep their lands in order. And they could also prepare for their planting seasons, you know, once the water receded, and just predict how they were going to conduct that next year, depending on the flooding, which they knew was caused by the sun.
Well, Jabal, well, how much impositions of
These
Christianity,
things, yes.
how much was Christian imposed, and the methodology in which they imposed Christianity on the
Well,
people?
I don't know if any of you have the opportunity to obtain Gerald Massey's book, Ancient Egypt, The Light of the World. It's not an easy read because he did not write it for just regular everyday people. He wrote it for the people he was challenging, the priests and preachers and the so-called Egyptologists, etc., etc. But his whole book is based on going back through the ancient Egyptian text to what they call the Book of the Dead and what he calls the ritual, and showing how everything that the Christian Gospels were based on or written from had been written down by the ancient Egyptians centuries before that, you know, so that they really took those stories, plagiarized them, and without understanding the science. That was the key. They just plagiarized them and tried to call it a history of a man that actually was born and lived in on the earth and walked the earth. His everything from his sayings to his activities, it's all was written and applied to the Egyptian metaphor for the sun, which was in the father as Osiris, and the son was called Horus, and Horus means the maker of fire. The or he. H-E or H-O or H-A that begins the term was the natural sound we make coming into contact with fire. You know, that's hot. That's where the word hot comes from, for that matter. You know, and then R was the sound which they use the glyph of the lion, reclining lion, to denote the roar, which causes all kinds of action or activity, whether it comes from any, from the hippopotamus or from the elephant, or from any animal, it creates action. So that R meant the source or activity, the source of any action or activity, in this case, was fire. So Horus meant the source or the maker of fire. That's what the term Horus, the name, meant. And all of this was in metaphor by the ancient Gnostics, applying it to the sun, which was far the highest deity. And as I said, this was practiced around the world, not just in ancient Egypt. So it was practiced around the world. And wherever we look, the further we look back and the deeper we look at what the ancient cultures, we find more and more it evolved out of Africa. So the Christians, when they came along, literally, they went after with Constantine. Actually, the problem began with, I can't hear you. You're on mute.
Yeah, go ahead. You know, my concern is that the ancient Christian is one thing, but the modern day Christian is another thing. Many of them recognize that the word Bible means collection of books.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Bible means that it's a spiritual writing, a mm-hmm. collection of a holy story that mm-hmm. God gave people or inspired people to write. But most people don't understand the whole origin of the Nicene Conference, where they put the books together that mm-hmm. made up the Holy Bible, that these were, you know, mainly white men that did it. And mm-hmm. and what I was trying to get at is that, you know, people celebrate Christmas, some Christians, not all Christians, they recognize that they don't know when Jesus was born, but they just accept the 25th of December as a day to celebrate it. Because
mm-hmm.
nobody really knows when Jesus was born.
No.
And so they just accept it as a spiritual holiday.
Yeah.
Even though, and they base it on just that. And even the symbols. The trees that the Germans brought over from the paradise tree all the way to the, what you call the evergreen tree, and that they used to put candles on trees, but now they put lights. But those lights were supposed to symbolize fire that warded off evil spirits during this period. And the ornaments and all of that mistletoe, all of these symbols came. Have a definition and a reason why they came into existence and who introduced them to Christmas. Even Santa Claus. And they used to call him Old Nick, and he's named after St. Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And all of those things, most people don't even get into that.
Yeah.
Most people that celebrate Christmas ain't been to church all year or in the last 5 years. But yeah. They're out there in the commercial, get caught up in the commercialization of Christmas.
Yeah.
I remember when, first of all, you're not supposed to lie to children. And I remember parents telling their kids, taking them down to the mall, sitting on Santa's lap and all that, and wishing and telling Santa what they want for Christmas and all that. Well, most psychologists tell you that you don't lie to children. But there are parents lying to children. Make them go to bed, wake up, and there's a bunch of gifts under the tree, and Santa bought me this, and Santa bought me that, when they bought it. You understand?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it creates, I mean, like, people line up in malls, and they be fighting over dolls. I mean, this is a Christmas. Then people go shoplifting and stealing gifts, wrap them up, and give it to people. steal them from porches off of Amazon and internet, and give gifts to other people. So my concern is there are some Christians that you know, they use it as a family day to get together and have a big dinner. They use it as a day in which they reflect on what they consider to be their blessings. You see what I'm saying? And even New Year's. Even though you got old bills that overlap the new year, there's nothing really new about a new year. Because you still got the old problems. You see what I'm saying? You just bring them into the new, into the next day. And so, could you, before we close out, you know, could you just respond to those points I was making?
Well, you know, we are given this so-called historical character, this Jesus of the Bible.
I'm good.
Without any explanation that makes sense, that is scientific. And we, you know, we told, I had this problem when I was a child, you know, but, you know, to believe, you know, you add one and you get two and on, and that if you couldn't prove something scientifically, then it was fake. So whenever I was in going to Bible studies or Bible school, I would always want to know, well, how did he do that? You know, when they talked about all of these things that Jesus did, explain it. And they'd always tell me, you just got to have faith, you know, got to believe, you know, that was their off ramp, you know, from explaining. So I always had my doubts. And I believe that most people who claim to be Christian today have the same doubts. There's no reason why they shouldn't have them. But the problem is where is their offered, where is the truth author offered? You know, it's just no place. You know, I had to come up and go to school, and thank goodness I went into Black studies and they freed me up to do my research. Really get into, and then luckily I had been to Japan and learned some of the Japanese, so I could come back and make comparisons. And then I realized how important etymology, which is word origin, tracing where it came from and what it meant, originally meant. And if it was one word, then it could be chapters. And as a matter of fact, that's exactly what happened, because all of the so-called gospels of Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, all of those were written down by the ancient Gnostics in Egypt as metaphors for the sun in the sky, and giving it the title Horos, and saying this is the maker of fire, et cetera, and equating its existence to human life so that you could have these dates of celebration. But most of the people who claim Christianity, they don't understand any of that, because none of it is ever offered. If you ask these priests, I don't know about these days, but back in my day when I asked preacher, he got to the point where you were scared to ask, because you might get in trouble for just asking the question, you know. So one, getting back to Massey's ancient Egypt, is he explains almost line for line how the ancient gospels assigned to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, how they were taken almost verbatim from the ancient Egyptian writings and then converted into a history, a claim of history. And that claim of history had started a couple of hundred years before became the Emperor of Rome, back about 2,000 years ago. In fact, I think Augustus died in the year 12 AD. So he had a following, a cult following, just the same as you see these MAGA people celebrating their this guy Trump. You know, they had this kind of following, and they wanted to raise him to the status of a cult figure, you know, Jim Jones type. And when he passed away, the people, the followers in Rome, wanted to call him the Messiah, you know. Just to show you, without having any understanding of what the word Messiah meant, where it came from, you know, because it was a Gnostic term for the rites of the sun, which was all metaphorical. But without any understanding of what they were copying, they didn't want to lose, the emperor didn't want to lose the following of the people in the empire. So, and they knew that they had all these Gnostic beliefs, so they wanted to, they kept the names of the various important people in the in from the Egyptian writings, the Book of the Dead, kept the names and the dates, and just called it history, that this guy actually existed and walked the land, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you look at it from a, as I said, a scientific point of view, then you could disprove it in an instant. But most of us never get that opportunity. And most of the preachers that we ask, so in the first place, so they just brush it off as, boy, you just got to have faith, you know, and God can do anything, you know, and all of this stuff. And so you had this plagiarization followed by an alteration, you know, and they never did understand, they couldn't apply it to history without there being huge mistakes. As we said, of believing that this Jesus character was born at Christmas without understanding what the term Yesu or Jesus meant in the first place. And not taking the Gnostic pictures of the mummy as a child born, just reborn on Christmas Day without equating it to the fact that, hey, Gnostics celebrated that day as the birth of the sun, not physically, but in the spiritual world, you see. So these were the things that they didn't understand. And then you had all of those other superficial things, as you Rob was mentioning, you know, Saint Nicholas and Christmas trees and on and on and on and on. And I guess that goes all the way up to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, but listen,
Modern times.
boss, there are people who have what they believe a revelation that God revealed his existence to them through prayer, and they had an episode. Maybe their mother had cancer and they prayed and the cancer went away. Maybe they were involved in an accident and everybody got hurt but them. Like the kid that was in the airport, with the guy that's in the airplane, and the airplane crashed, all the people died but him. And they would come out and say, well, God spared me, you know, and God intervened. It's hard to argue against that to me. I mean, that's their realization. I mean, and you're not going to, it's very difficult to convince them that there was not a divine intervention that saved their lives, that was medicine and beyond this. And be able to envision your ancestors that have passed and even communicate to them. People have those revelations. And I'm just want to say,
I think that's just human nature. Hey, a man can hit a home run in the game and raise his hand up and do the sign of the cross, you know, as if God allowed him to hit that ball at that time, and you know, different things like that. So I think that's a part of human nature, and it's assigning stuff to the mysteries or miracles, if you want to call it that, because that's the way they view it, as some sort of miracle. And yet Massey, in writing about this, has a chapter which he's called The Miracles, The Mysteries and the Miracles, where he explains, look, none of this stuff is miraculous, you know, and it's not mysterious. The only reason it's a mystery is because you don't know the answer, you don't know the science. And therefore, it becomes a mystery, you know. And then over time, if you're presented with science, the evidence that is there, then you could put a face on it, and then the mystery unfolds, and it's not a, no longer a mystery. But those kind of things are there. And then added to that is all the folklore, reindeers, for example, and on and on and on. And it's hard to, without studying these things, it's hard to discriminate between what's fact and what's fiction, you see? So that's just a phenomenon of the time. So this has been my argument all along is, hey, how can you claim to be a Christian when you know deep in your soul or deep in your heart that it's impossible? And then secondly, you don't make an effort to find out one way or the other. Do the research or listen to people who have done the research or are doing it, and how they explain it, So Massey's books were suppressed. Why? Because everything he did unraveled Christianity, the hoax of it, it just totally unraveled. He said, man. And when he started out, as a matter of fact, he started out as a speaker in behalf of Christianity. And he said he was a few years in before he realized the hoax of it. And once he discovered that, he wanted his revenge. He said, no, you ain't gonna do me like that, So he turned on him and he started reporting his research. And then they tried to ban him, and tried to muffle him and didn't want to debate him publicly. He challenged them all by name. So it became a he became an embarrassment in But his books sold out every time. Why? Because these people who were saying all of these fake things about the Christianity were the ones who were buying it up because they were learning themselves, what the truth was. So,
Okay. Well, listen, Jabal, I just want to say we deeply appreciate this lesson, as far as the origin of New Year's and the origin of Christmas. And I think it is eye-opening. It's very difficult to tell people who want gifts. This many of them don't care about Jesus or anybody else because
Well, this is especially true with black people because black people have the innate ability, have that melanin, that third eye. So they know that that spiritual realm exists, and there's no what is the unbelievable, And they, when something good or bad happens to them, then they assign it to that as being the cause or the reason. Well, God made me hit that ball, or God let me hit the lottery, or whatever, or God called and my husband's dead, or my wife's gone, or something like that. So that's what they do. So that's the difference with having melanin and being presented with these, fake, false misrepresentation and not having it. Whereas not having it, it just accentuates And white people don't like to look at it that way, but hey, what else could it be? Let's look at it scientifically and actually and factually, And the people without melanin were the ones who came up with the idea of this historic,
Yeah, but they also use Christianity as a moral perspective of getting people not to lie, not to cheat, not to steal.
That's the catch.
The Ten
That's the
Commandments.
catch.
I mean,
That's the
but some people would argue that because, well, first of all, Jews don't celebrate Christmas, and Muslims don't celebrate Christmas. That's over 2 billion people right there that don't celebrate it, but they they sell things during it, and they have celebrations during the winter solstice, as you say.
Yeah, they all believe in Abraham, so.
Yeah, they call it the Abraham faith.
Yeah.
My point is that there are some positives to religion. As far as when people develop a more of a sense of humanity, taking care of the vulnerable, having faith in them, and that life is going to change and get better, and that you live a good life, that you'll be rewarded at the end of your life, and if you live a righteous life and a divine life, that you will have eternal existence in some heaven or paradise or things of this nature. So
Professor Rowe,
yes.
Can I interject something?
Yeah.
So is that saying that we're perpetuating a lie to get you to do what you should be doing in the first place?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think it's a lie.
No. I'm saying that if what Jubal is saying about the origins of Christianity, which are just metaphoric, in that that is a false pretense, it's not even real. But I get what you're saying, where we get these moral lessons from it. But isn't that just common sense anyway? And then the other part of it is you're perpetuating the lie to get people to be moral.
You know, because if without morals and laws, people would do anything.
Well, let me say this. The morals, as we find in Christianity, which we all feel, I think, most of it, is also written by the Gnostics in the so-called Book of the Dead or the ritual. The logos, the sayings of Jesus, which we get all of those morals from, were all written verbatim in most cases by the Gnostics. So my point is, why not just go back to the origin and understand who we are as a people? I mean, how can you expect these Europeans who've committed, I don't know how many genocides now, to be the ones who present these gospels as being above, you know, as being.
Yeah, but you're wrong. All those people that profess to be Christians that are not practicing the Christian doctrine, they look at them as people that are not really Christians. The only way you can be a Christian is accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior and live a Christian life among Christians.
Yeah, well, you have to say that.
Among Christians. If you
ain't, froze on me.
If you're not a Christian, they look at you as just a pagan or just a Gentile, just somebody in general. I mean, Christmas started among Christians. You know, it was a Christian. It was a religious holiday for them. It was for Christians, but the general people became the part of the commercialization, even though they're not Christian. They ain't been baptized. They don't pay no tithes. They ain't did nothing that required that is a practice of Jesus, a practice of the religion. Mm. I'm just saying that for those that really, really believe, maybe your grandmother, your mothers, and things of this nature, it's hard to take that from them if that's all they got. You understand? It's faith. That they'll see their relative.
Well, what do we say? Ignorance is bliss.
Well, you can argue that. But
the fact is that most of the celebrations and ceremonies conducted by the church, I know you're not talking about those in particular, but just the morals and but most of those things were all celebrated by the Gnostics to begin with, and almost all of them, you check the dating, it will align with the position of the sun, which has eight different positions, which are specific to the earth. That is the first day of each season, which the religion doesn't talk about. First of spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And then the midway point in between each one of those dates. You know, for example, you say Halloween, which occurs on the 1st of November, is exactly midway between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice, you know, between the death in metaphor of the sun and the rebirth in the spiritual world at Christmas. And I just don't, I believe that people who, as we said, so emphatically believe in the moral aspect of it would be grateful to know that you can still retain the moral aspects, but at the same time have the knowledge of the origin. There's nothing wrong with worship in nature. There's nothing wrong with seeing the sun as really being the producer and sustainer of life on earth, period. Yeah. So what's lost? You know, nothing is lost.
I understand church is a business. I mean, they have turned church into a business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ethiopian Coptic Church was one of the first churches. Mosque for the Muslims, and synagogues were for the Jewish, and the temples were for the Buddhists, and things of this nature. They all have their different rituals. You understand, in different methodologies of saying that there's a creator. And when you say that there's no God, you're saying that there's no creation.
I'm not saying that, and I would say there's no God that as exists the way the Bible says, period. Doesn't. But if you apply nature, then you can explain all of those so-called mysteries and miracles as the reality, because they're science. And the Gnostics kept the science. And what was so blaring, especially to the Greek and Roman empires, what was so glaring in their face about the whole thing were the monuments that they built in Egypt. I mean, it's one thing to say that, you know, God is the sun or da 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 da.
He's making great points, and
you know, had that innate ability that must pass for in order to receive eternal life, then it must be. And this is the problem that we have with our own people, is that they miss that part. They don't have, you know, the Christianity Bible only tells you you're going to heaven, you know, but they don't say what happens in the, or what our ancient ancestors believe happens to you after those points, and how you obtain immortality and those kind of things. That is what's left out of the whole Christian narrative. And besides the fact that since this was first presented by these white people, then they have injected white supremacy into it, because they know without melanin they're inferior, and they want to overcome that. And so they call themselves God's chosen people. You understand? And the Gnostics were called heathen and pagans and savages and whatever other ugly name they can think of to justify the genocides that they've performed over all of these centuries. And we've got to get away from all of that, you know. We have a problem with a segment of the population that is deformed. And we know that we could overcome it. But once we have to get knowledge first, and that set our goals and then go for it. And but as it stands now, we don't even have we have problems getting the knowledge because the teachers, the preachers, I should say, are leading us down this this folkloric path, you know, and God.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna have to close out, Jabbar. It's getting late. I'm not gonna even get into the Kwanzaa thing tonight. I might do it tomorrow night if I have a little time after. Are we
Okay.
on tomorrow night, Roger Key?
Yes, we got Brother Thomas coming on.
Yeah, I may do it after his presentation. But I
Okay.
just want to say again, Asante, Jabbar, you know you have a wealth of knowledge, and I'm glad you do all this research and simplify it for us. It's very eye-opening and very thought-provoking. But at the same time, I'll tell you, you try to take God or Jesus from these Christians, they'll kill you. Even though that's your night, and that's how emphatic they are. You understand?
We all know, but it's up to us as teachers to do the work and then present the facts, you know, whether they accept it or not, you know.
I agree with everything you're saying as far as the knowledge that you have presented. It's irrefutable. You got books, you got physical examples through the pyramids and through the coffin texts and the Papyrus Annae and all of those historical writings lay that out. But it's still people are so into. Is there life after death? And what happens after death? Even though you can call it the biggest lie ever told, that you only get one life and that's it, they want to believe that they'll see their ancestors in a spiritual sense after they die. And they
Well,
want
you know, people like us, all in this group and the outside of this group, we are commissioned ourselves to find out the facts and then teach it. And it's difficult and it's a hard nut to crack, but we got to keep on keeping on. What else can we do? You know, each one teach one. So
Yeah.
we'll just keep moving. And hopefully, the time will come when we can actually sit down and debate these facts with people who come in from the other side, and we could show them, and you know, that we're right, you know, and we got to go for the right, you know, and we just have to keep on, and no matter how hard-headed these
Hey,
followers are.
Brother Jabbar.
Yes.
So you would on the podcast, you would go you would do a debate with a person that refutes what you're saying?
Sure, why not?
Okay, well I'm gonna try to set that up then.
All
It'll
right. We can
interesting.
use just what Rob mentioned, immortality, as a very good subject. That's something I've been looking at a lot into. And not because I'm getting old either. Just because I want to know the truth, you know? You know, why would our people sacrifice so much and so many of us in beliefs of what is naturally there unless they could prove it, you know? And this is what we have to give to our people. You know, we've strayed away from it. Man, how can you, this is our oppressor, and we actually accept his version of what is? Come on.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, Brother Jabbar. It has to make sense to me for me to roll with it. It doesn't make sense. I can't go with that.
Amen.
But this is very fitting for the topic tomorrow. Brother Thomas' topic is ancient and modern religions are rooted in the worship of a black god. So it'll be we can see what he's talking about versus what you're talking about. So that'll be very interesting because he does a like a PowerPoint presentation at times. So that'll be good.
All right, Jamal.
All right. I
Thank
appreciate the
you, man.
opportunity.
I know you
And
in Florida. Well, how many hours you're ahead of us?
Three.
I didn't.
He's
You,
three
it's a
hours,
3 hour
Roger.
difference. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
Yeah,
well,
that's no problem at all. Trust me.
all right.
But
Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity. I just wish I had the gift that you have for remembering events and dates and names. Wow. That's long since gone from me, man. But
Right.
you, man, you're amazing. I said,
You must
dang,
have
how do you
been.
remember all of that stuff? My
Yeah,
father was like that. He remember he remember a bet he made at somebody over a pool game or something 30 years before.
man,
Tell you everything.
I went to
I don't have that kind of memory anymore.
me and Roger Key went through my son's Kwanzaa thing, man. I was feeling good. Got in there and got real shit. Had to leave. And I generally give a Kwanzaa statement, a Kwanzaa presentation. Annually, he does it. And, it was just, I mean, I got so, I mean, I don't know. I think it was my diabetes got to acting up because I hadn't eaten. And sugar dropped real low. I think that was it. But anyway, Rasha Key came out and it was just a nice affair. Everybody enjoyed it, But I just want to say, man, we will entail you back in. I know you got to go back to Cuba and
Yeah, I'm going
Houston
in about a week, so.
yeah. So, but next time you're in town, whenever you're in town, we're gonna make space for you on my show. You
Right.
understand? Anytime. All right.
No, I appreciate it. That way I don't be doing all this digging and hunting and
Yeah.
for nothing, you know.
Oh yeah, but this will be on YouTube, and we'll let everybody know. You understand? We're
But
getting
just, man, it's a
Rasha Key sends
badass.
it out to a lot of people that even I didn't come tonight because of the holiday.
All right.
So Barry and Jinjay and Mashariki, they all get copies of it.
Oh man, give them all my love, man. I miss everybody. Those were the days, as they say. Y'all woke me up. Shoot, you kidding?
All right.
We'll
So,
see. All right.
you want to end it with the Kwanzaa rhyme?
Yeah.
No, I'm
No,
just saying.
tomorrow.
What day is this?
The day is purpose, near fifth day.
Okay.
Well, see, Kwanzaa, just briefly, Kwanzaa is not a religious holiday. It's a cultural holiday, a
Right.
celebration of family, community, and culture.
Right.
And it's designed around seven principles called the Nguzo Saba, that was created by Dr. Maulana Karenga in 1966, right after the Watts Rebellion. The reason I know was because I was there in 1965 and 66 in Watts and area when they introduced the concept of a black holiday. Most people just think celebrating Kwanzaa is like just another day. But it's 7 days of celebrating each principle. And the first principle is unity. So that's the first day, and they light the candles, or what they call candle lighting. And then we go from there, we go to Kujichakulia. Well, first, Umoja means striving for unity in the family, in the community, in the nation, and in the race. It's designed for black people. It came, it, they didn't ask the government. It's celebrated in all the continents on Earth. There's a celebration of Kwanzaa. Millions of people now. It started out real small, just a small group of people, because most people, couldn't grasp a black holiday. But they stuck with it, and now it's institutionalized, accepted. But the first principle that you celebrate is Umoja, which means unity. Now, that's very difficult. Unless you apply principles that can bring forth unity, such as Operation Unity that Dr. Feringa introduced, called Unity with Diversity and Unity Without Uniformity. We don't have to dress alike. That means uniformity. Mm. You don't have to wear the same things all the time, like crosses and collars and stuff like that. You don't have to unity with diversity and unity with without uniformity, that you recognize the diversity of our people. What I'm saying, Christians, Muslims, and Black Jews celebrate Kwanzaa. Mm-hmm. It comes after their holiday. You know, especially Christmas. Kwanzaa started on the 26th of December.
Yeah.
A lot of the government wanted people to think that, are they trying to take the place of Christmas just to get people not to celebrate it? You understand? This was an effort by Dr. Feringa to bring forth a celebration of ourselves, our culture, our values, mm-hmm. and our ethics. And the whole purpose of celebrating Kwanzaa is to get you started for the next year. The next year, so that mm-hmm. you can practice those principles in the home and among your children and things of that nature. And it's very challenging, but anyway. The second principle is Kujichakalia, which means self-determination. Mm-hmm. To name ourselves, to develop ourselves, to defend ourselves, and to exercise our right to be ourselves. What do we want freedom for? Freedom to be like white people? You know, I mean, that's what many Black people wanted. And mm-hmm. that's what our biggest struggle was to say freedom is our right to be ourselves, that we can be African, and we can exercise a Black consciousness and things mm-hmm. of that nature without being ostracized by anybody and punished for being who you are. It's very difficult for Black people to walk in and get a job in African attire. You understand? But a Jewish person can walk in with a Cuba hat on or whatever that they name it and can go in with them with their ways, and it's okay. And other groups, you know, some Chinese don't dress like Europeans. Mm-hmm. This nature. But anyway, so Kujichakalia is self-determination. We must define who we are. Don't let no one else define us and develop ourselves. And then there's Ujima, collective work and responsibility. I mean, that's something you have to teach your children. Your family is a part of a collective work, and we all take part in making the family progressive. Jabal and all of us of age had a role to play in the family. And the role wasn't to see our parents as ATMs or to deviate who we are. Do you know, it's very important to accept who you are and quit wearing fake hair and fake costumes and things like that. Be who you are as an African people. All right? And that's character-wise also. So collective work and responsibility is that. And then Ujamaa is cooperative economic. That is to buy, keep our money in our community, among ourselves. See, Malcolm X said that we're in position to have a bloodless revolution.
Mm.
Where most revolutions are bloody, he said, we are. All we have to do is just change what we do.
Mm.
Stop drinking. Don't buy no liquor. Don't smoke no cigarettes. Eat nutritional stuff. That right there will hurt the economy. You understand? Because everything we do because white people do it.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
And so we see ourselves as Americans, not Africans.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mental, it's called menticide, as Bobby Wright would say. And then, so anyway, when we say cooperative economics, now it is a challenge. It's easy to go to different store, black stores and black clothing stores and barbershops and things of that nature. But we have to develop financial institutions that can finance houses, finance cars, finance investment, a place you can invest your money, banks and that flourish and give you top money for your interest if you save, and that you can go there and get business loans and things of this nature and pay it back and you do the right thing. So you got to go into that level of thinking and working when it comes to cooperative economics. We're a long way from that. You understand? Because the system don't ever want, they want you to depend on them to come and get that kind of money. You're talking about buying a $500,000 house. The interest alone, you're going to pay $1 million for it if you ever pay for it. You understand? And that's going to be difficult. If you don't start buying the house as a young person, then you ain't gonna never pay it off. And you really don't never pay it off because they, even though you get the deed, you still pay taxes on it. You understand? So you forever paying for the house. You understand? And the more property you have, the more challenging it is. Because to have a house and to try to buy another house require a bigger down payment because it's not your house that you live in. So that financing is altogether different. You understand? But that's what our children have to be taught and trained about. Cooperative economics requires education. And then there's NEA, which means purpose. What is our purpose in life? To do good and bring good into the world, as Jabal would say. That seemed to be nature. You watch animals, you learn from animals, you learn from the environment, that you learn to read it. Like George Washington Carver said, if you treat the plants right, they'll talk back to you. That's what George Washington said. Said if you love, you know, it's the same thing with pets and things of this nature. And the continent of Africa, they had no fences or nothing. And they weren't worried about lions coming and predators coming, and they had no. There was no word for jail. There was no word for that. People, I remember Jamal. I think that was you that told me that you just jump on the bus when the people come, and you ride with it. You know, I mean, there was no issue about the way transportation. You know, you either rode on an animal or you created the wheel, and you know you do that. But what happens is we get into the point that we think our purpose in life is greed and envy. And that means that the disease you get is the wants, and the only cure is to have. And you'll do anything to get what you want. And that creates crime and creates people stealing and things of this nature. Whereas if you have peace, you it's a whole different game. Because you know all Kwanzaa means is loving black people and seeing the good in black people. So our purpose is to find good and do good and bring good into the world. And then there's Kuumba, which means creativity. That's the sixth principle, to create for ourselves and to that there's so much that we can create. People, Ebony Magazine was created. Black Enterprise was created. Motown was created. Black Negro Baseball was created. We can still create things instead of just going and giving our money to Europeans for entertainment. And all their entertainment is about killing and monsters and things of this nature, because that's how they see the world. You understand? Everybody's a monster but them. And they're the biggest monster. But that's a whole different argument. And I don't want to lose y'all, because people be wanting to believe that there's some good white people. And well, you may marry one, you may know some in your family and things of this nature. We ain't talking about them. We're talking about the one that voted Trump and the one that believe in that they're superior to everybody. Even the poor ones say, I'm poor, but I'm better than blacks. You understand? And we should take whatever black people have, because they don't deserve it. They can't. We brought them here to work the land, not own the land. That's their mentality. And then the last principle is faith. Faith in ourselves, faith in our mothers, our fathers, faith in all that makes us strong and beautiful. And that we got to find that in each other. But the people can't practice Kwanzaa unless they accept these values and these principles and put them into practice. It's one thing. It's like Jabal and everybody was saying, there are people that go to church on Sunday after being drunk on Saturday. You understand? I mean, they get up and I got to go to church. You understand? Well, oh, man, damn. You went out, messed with prostitutes, or did whatever you had to do, and then you go to church, and all you have to do is go up there and say, ask God for forgiveness, and all is well, and you go back to, after church, you go back to doing what you were doing that Saturday. And so it's a challenging thing to stay steadfast. Like I said, I grew up wild and watching Compton, and we the only thing we had in the morning is what we took that night, and so we we're into a mentality, a European mentality of taking and getting what you can out the system, and that they owe us that. It's sort of like extrapolating reparations from the devil. That's what we did in the Watts rebellion. When they called it looting, we called it extrapolating our reparations, because they cheat so much and lie so much, and they mistreat you in the stores, follow you and all that. So we just took it, when the opportunity comes. But anyway, I had to stop those waves to be an example for my kids and be an example for other young people. When I say wow, we didn't come up with the morals and the ethics that we should have been practicing. You understand? When you live in the projects and you come up in the Watts and Willowbrook area and Compton, it was. You just walk up to somebody and swing on them and say, I fired on that fool. You understand? And then you put a stick on people. You remember this, Ernest? Put a stick on somebody's shoulder if you talking about this mama. And boy, it's on then. He knocked the stick off my shoulder. Boy, oh, man. Fights. But it wouldn't kill it like they do today. You understand? The most we had is bumper jacks at a party. Or zip gun. But anyway, I'm going on. Anyway, we'll talk more about it later. Anyway, but again, Jabal, million thanks. The grains of sand are few compared to the many thanks we offer you for your presentation. The grain of sand on the ocean floor it don't compare it to the many thanks we give to you for your worthy research and delivery, smooth delivery of your information. We look forward to it anytime you're in town, and you know that.
I appreciate
it. Your open invitation, brother, because this information needs to be put out there, and we're going to do our best to put it out there. Of the people that accept it or do their own research.
Well, what you do is you plant a seed.
Oh, yeah, we drop it.
It's there. And it's hard to deny. And if, as we age, I think people start thinking more and more about the possibility of immortality and want to know what our ancient, which I consider our greatest the greatest of us, what they thought about all of that. And, you know, and they had to do it from a natural, scientific, and natural foundation. And that's important. So it's like with the seven principles of Kwanzaa, that's great, it's beautiful. But just think if we could spread that on the foundation of truth and knowledge about ourselves and science, you know, how much more effective that would be, you see?
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to keep it on and keep on restudying and watching the video again and again. All right.
Keep on.
Peace.
Y'all take care.
All right.
Good to see you.
All right.
Each one teach one. And conscious one.
All right. Tutana.
Tutana.
All right.